ear ringing loud. His aim is too high, and the bullet chunks into the ceiling above the thicker metal of the SUV's doorframe. Andrew and Sabrina look at each other for a beat, sharing in the surprise, lunacy, and possibility of the moment. Sabrina cowers and then looks over her head, as though the missed shot might bring the sky crashing down on top of her. Andrew points the gun and says, "Drop that thing and back the fuck up." She says, "Okay, I'm sorry, okay." She doesn't drop the weapon. She shuffles backward and too quickly, so she's far enough away that his view of her is obscured by the SUV's interior and frame. Andrew shouts at her to stop moving and slides across the back seat, his bare legs scratched by bits of shattered window. His left side stings where he was jabbed twice, and his shirt is warmly damp with blood. His swollen knee throbs with a low but constant ache and is already turning an inky storm cloud purple. The pain is bearable, but he's unsure if the leg will hold his weight. By the time he's to the edge of the rear seat, his legs dangling over the gravel driveway, Sabrina is a blur, running away to the left. He shouts, "Stop! Stop right now!" Using the open door, he pulls himself up so that he stands on his left leg. He lowers his right foot onto the ground and slowly adds weight. His knee holds. Sabrina is 20 or so paces away, legs pumping, and her bulky weapon swaying side to side. She's close to being able to duck around a corner of the cabin and out of his sight. He yells at her to stop again, and when she doesn't, he steps to the right to avoid shooting over the car door or having to crouch to shoot through the smashed window. He takes a deep breath and aims low for her legs, and as he unconsciously replants his right foot and fires a shot, his knee gives out, bowing outside his profile, insisting upon continuing in the lateral direction. The shot misses, the report echoing over the lake and within their little bowl of forest, and Andrew falls. Sabrina is gone, disappearing around the side of the cabin. Is she going to run into the woods and hide? Or is she going all the way out back into the deck, or up through the basement and then back inside to warn and help the others? Will the others come outside now, after hearing the gunfire? Fuck, fuck, fuck! Andrew thrashes about on the ground, as though he is drowning, until he muscles onto his feet. He decides he doesn't have time to wait for the self-opening pneumatic rear gate to open, or to crawl back inside the car and root around for more ammunition. He's already left Eric and Wen alone with the others for too long. Will the others be more inclined to hurt Eric and or Wen because they heard one, if not both, gunshots? He tests a forward step on his gimpy knee. It quivers, as loose as a slinky, but he remains upright. He takes a second step, and then a third, and he makes a deal with his knee. It will continue to function as long as he walks only in a straight line and doesn't move brashly to either side. Back on the front lawn, and without the sound of gravel shifting under his feet, the abrupt silence is a new terror. The cabin, even with the benefit of the morning's wholesome sunlight, appears worn, tired, and bereft. The paint on the door and trim is dulled and sun-bleached. The wooden shingles are blemished with dots of mildew and are loose and as asymmetrical as crooked teeth. The cabin is now a haunted house, baptized by yesterday's violence, and its passive accumulation of similarly vicious and desperate acts is as inevitable as dust gathering on the windowsills. Even with the windows locked shut and front door closed, shouts, grunts, and the wooden thuds and knocks of physical struggle emanate from inside the cabin. His hybrid run limp across the grass to the front stairs is as long and lonely as a doomed expedition. He passes Wen's grasshopper jar. Sunlight flares off the glass and aluminum lid, screwed on tightly, as though saying, "See me, see me." Lying on its side and sunk into the taller grass, the earth is already absorbing it, consuming the evidence of its existence. He oddly hoped Leonard wasn't lying about setting the grasshoppers free. It's possible he let them go and resealed the lid, but unlikely. That Andrew finds the jar, glinting sunlight, and most certainly containing the dead bodies of Wen's 7 named grasshoppers, seems a cruelly mocking harbinger. Andrew clambers up the cement front stairs, loading both feet on one step before moving on to the next. Lifting and bending his right knee is exponentially more painful than when walking straight and on flat ground. Once on the landing, he hears Eric yelling inside the cabin, "Stay away! Leave us alone!" And it sounds like he's on the left side of the common room. Andrew leans, pressing his shoulder against the doorframe, allowing his right leg to rest a moment. He wraps his left hand around the doorknob, and before turning it, he quickly attempts to work out what he'll say or do or see after the door opens. He cannot open the door and start shooting indiscriminately. The rash first shot fired at, near, Sabrina inside the SUV unnerved him, as he doesn't remember actively deciding to shoot. It just happened. Andrew closes his eyes and flattens his body against the door. He's as close to being inside the cabin as he can be, without actually being in it. Adrian yells about not wanting to die. Leonard tells Eric to stop swinging and let's talk. He says, "Eric, let's talk," repeatedly. Leonard's voice is muffled, an echo across the canyon of the common room. Andrew holds the gun up near his face so he can swing the arm down and instantly point it into the room. He takes a deep breath, turns the knob, and the door opens, the cabin greedy for his re-entrance. Andrew lurches inside and he lowers the gun in front of him. No one seems to notice he's there. Eric is to his left, stationed in front of Wen's bedroom doorway. His left leg is free, but his right leg is snared in twisted, stretched-out rope, still attached to a fallen chair on the floor trailing behind him. He swings Adrian's flower of hand shovel and trowel blades-tipped staff in sweeping, menacing arcs. An inefficient machine, he sweats through his shirt and breathes in gulping hitches. His shoulders sagging and his spine curved, he grimaces before and after each swipe and whoosh of the weapon. Leonard stands in front of the couch and the darkened TV on the wall. He says, "Everyone, let's calm down. Let's talk. This isn't good for anyone." In that insufferable, "I'm just trying to help," tone. It's instantly clear to Andrew that Leonard, despite all the earlier talk about how they were running out of time, is perfectly content to let Eric work himself to total exhaustion. Leonard has his dual-tipped wooden staff, the one O'Bannon brought into the cabin. But he does not brandish it. It's hidden behind his back, like the world's worst-kept secret. If Eric is a cornered lion tamer, then Adrian is the lion, stalking, pacing, and darting forward at Eric, and then skittering back when he swings what was once her staff. She has a steak knife in each hand, the blades thin, but serrated. The knives appear comically small and ineffectual compared to the other weapons. Andrew strays from the doorway, deeper into the room. Everyone else finally sees him. They stop moving and talking, and they gape. Eric sways in place and he blinks like he doesn't believe what he's seeing, or he's seeing something that isn't there. He lowers the bladed end of the weapon to the floor and holds his forehead with his right hand. Andrew can't tell if this is an expression of relief or anguish. Andrew points the gun in the general shared direction of Leonard and Adrian. He wants to yell and scream and threaten and hurt. He yearns for both of them to hurt for this. He says, "Drop the knives," to Adrian. She screams with her mouth closed, a terrifying sound, one that makes Andrew fear that he is nowhere near in control despite the gun. Drop them now, or I swear. She exaggeratedly opens her hands, and the knives clatter against the hardwood floor. All right. Andrew takes a deep breath and alternates pointing the gun at Adrian and Leonard. Where is Wen? Leonard says, She's okay. I'm not talking to you, Eric. Where is she? Eric points behind him, and Wen appears in the bedroom doorway. Her eyes are puffy and red, her cheeks streaked with dirt and tears. Her thumbs have retreated inside the home of her fists. Her fists seek sanctuary next to her mouth. A warm gust of wind at Andrew's back locomotives through the front entrance across the common room and rattles the deck screen slider. Andrew is reminded that Sabrina is still out there and could be sneaking up behind him at any time. He tosses quick and uneasy looks to the front yard. He will not close the door, even though he probably should. Being reconfined to the cabin space is not an option. Leonard talks in an almost whisper, the words too fragile, too strained with disappointment and melancholy, to also burden with volume. You're dooming us all, Andrew. You're dooming Eric and Wen, too. I'm done with you. I don't have to listen to another goddamn word you say. He imagines shooting Leonard in the thigh above the knee, and the streamer of blood that would spurt out as he's cut to the floor. Andrew, shut your fucking mouth! He stretches out his arm toward Leonard. The gun doesn't feel heavy, but his fingers twined around the grip and his pointer curled through the trigger guard are stiffening again, and there are twinges of threatening muscle cramps in his forearm. Leonard doesn't react to the gun being shakily pointed at him. He's more resigned than calm, the one who believes he sees the end coming. Andrew. It's not Leonard speaking, but Eric. Andrew, let's go now. We can go now. We'll leave them here and we can go. His voice is hoarse, raspy. How is he going to be able to walk anywhere if he looks and sounds as bad as that? They could try driving the SUV on the slashed tires, but it wouldn't be long before the tires disintegrated and the rims got hopelessly stuck in the dirt road. It might not even make it out of the driveway and through the quicksand gravel. They are going to have to walk a big chunk, if not all, of the trip out of here, which, if they were to walk all the way to the main road, would take upwards of 5 or 6 hours. They could go in the opposite direction, deeper down the road that snakes along the lakeshore, and search out another cabin with people or a phone. But the nearest cabin is still miles. Andrew. Yeah, all right. We're gonna tie these two up first, only fair, right? Eric nods slowly and closes his eyes. He still has one hand over his forehead, like he's holding something in, keeping it from escaping. Adrian asks, Did you kill Sabrina? Her hands open and arms outstretched, frozen in there, I dropped the knives like you said, position. She wasn't gonna hurt you. We heard the shots. No, I didn't shoot her. Andrew regrets answering truthfully. Why let them think Sabrina might come to help them? He's screwing this all up. But that doesn't mean I won't shoot you. Another breeze flutters into the cabin like a lost spirit, and Andrew can't help but take another peek over his shoulder to look for Sabrina. It's only a glance, one that lasts 2 seconds at the most. When he looks back, Adrian is charging at him from a semi-crouched position, teeth bared in a silent snarl, and a suddenly not-so-dropped knife raised above her head. Wen. One Sunday afternoon in late winter, Wen's dads asked her to come into their bedroom. They were super serious and had those half-amused, half-sad smiles they wore whenever she would tell them she didn't like Chinese school. They told her there was something important they wanted to show her and talk about. Wen thought she was in trouble because they found out she was sneaking into their bedroom to look through all her baby pictures. She worried if they were mad enough, they might not let her watch TV for an hour after dinner or take away her phone. Both were things they had threatened, but never enacted. She knew going into their room without asking was why they were mad at her. But it was their fault for keeping the pictures in there. She didn't think it was fair those pictures were hidden away when they should be kept somewhere else for easier access, maybe even in her room. They were pictures of her, after all. That was what she was going to say after telling them she was sorry for sneaking in and they were through being mad. But this meeting with her dad's wasn't about the pictures. Not really. This was about Daddy Andrew's gun and the gun safe hidden in the room. He wouldn't say where. He held up a chunky black container the size of a shoebox that had some buttons on a front panel, but he didn't let her look at it for long. They asked her if she'd ever found or seen it. They said she had to promise to tell the truth. She hadn't seen it before, and that was the truth. Daddy Andrew said he got a new gun safe, and he showed it to her. It was silver, smaller than the other one, and it looked like a mini spaceship. In the weeks and months after this family meeting, Wen didn't say anything to her friends about having a gun at home. But she did tell Geeta and Orvin that one of her dads had a special silver safe he kept in a secret place. And Wen and her friends spent a recess making a game out of guessing what he kept hidden in there. Daddy Andrew turned around, holding the safe so she couldn't see it. And when he turned back, the top was flipped open like the rear hatch of their car. Inside was a gun. She wasn't sure what it would look like, but she imagined it would be bigger, something she would have to hold with two hands. Daddy Andrews said it wasn't loaded, but it still was a very, very dangerous thing. Daddy Eric kept saying it wasn't a toy, and under no circumstances was she ever to touch the safe or the gun. He kept shaking his head when he talked, like this whole thing was a terrible idea. They explained Daddy Andrew had a special license and had taken a lot of classes to learn how to keep and use the gun properly. They never told her why he had it, and she didn't ask. They knew she was coming into their room and going under the bed to get her baby pictures. They weren't mad, and her looking at the pictures was, of course, okay. They were going to move the pictures and put them in the hutch out in the living room, so she could look at them whenever she wanted. Wen was embarrassed they knew about her sneaking in for the photos. But the embarrassment quickly faded. Daddy Andrew took the gun out of the safe and let it sit in his open hand. And it looked bigger and smaller, more real and more fake. Daddy Andrew asked her if she wanted to hold it. But before she could answer yes, Daddy Eric said he changed his mind and he didn't want her touching the gun. Daddy Andrew didn't argue. As he put it back in the safe and shut the lid, they said so many kids got hurt and sometimes killed playing with guns, usually found guns that belonged to their parents. They said she wasn't allowed in their bedroom by herself anymore. Daddy Andrew said, "No more snooping around in here." They said, even though it had a special lock and wouldn't open for her or anyone other than Daddy Andrew, she was never to move or touch the gun safe. They said these new rules were the most important rules ever. Wen reviews those most important rules and stares at Daddy Andrew and his gun. She wonders where he hid the silver safe. She didn't realize the car had secret places in which to hide things. Andrew says, "Yeah, all right. We're going to tie these two up first. Only fair, right?" Adrian asks, "Did you kill Sabrina?" She stands still and with her arms out like a scarecrow, one mad it can't scare everyone away. It's Adrian who scares Wen the most now. Adrian would have clubbed her with the shovel-bladed weapon if Eric hadn't picked up Andrew's chair and knocked the thing out of her hands. Wen wants to tell Daddy Andrew to not listen to her, that she might find a way to hurt him with her words. She wasn't gonna hurt you. We heard the shots. Andrew says, no, I didn't shoot her. He pauses and gimps forward half a step. But that doesn't mean I won't shoot you. Wen wants to dissolve back into the bedroom so she doesn't have to see anything. She doesn't want to see what Adrian will do when she drops her hands or when her dads tie her to one of the chairs. She doesn't want to see Daddy Andrew shoot the gun. Wen tries to see outside the front door and to the lawn, but Andrew and the severe angle obscures her view. She again remembers the poor grasshoppers trapped in the jar and how horrible it must have been for them. Did they run out of air and die, crawling and knocking into the lid? Did they wind down like little toys on juiceless batteries? Did they, like Daddy Eric said they would, get cooked by the sun, boiling to death inside their own exoskeletons? Maybe they're still alive, but barely, and they are suffering. It's all her fault, and she quickly ticks off the grasshoppers' names in her head, and another crying fit begins to swell. Andrew looks behind them, as though he hears Wen thinking about the jar left in the grass. As he turns, Wen sees the entire common room splayed before her, and the adults animate, one movement begetting the next. She doesn't understand or even have time to react to all of it, but her brain catalogs everything to be parsed and dwelled upon later. Andrew swivels at the waist, peering over his left shoulder. Adrian drops to one knee, snatches up a knife with her taloned right hand, and launches at Andrew. Leonard sprints away from the couch, triggered by Adrian's springing forward. Andrew spins back around to face the room, and Adrian is only one or two steps from being on top of him. Her knife arm is raised triumphantly over her head. Leonard thunders across the room, shouting Adrian's name. Andrew fires the gun. There's a pop or a crack, sounding to Wen like two cars smashing together. Its punchy loudness is as jarring as its brevity and the silence that fills the vacuum after. Wen covers her ears. Adrian is stood up, jerked upright, and lifted and pushed onto her heels like the gun spewed out a magic invisible wall. Her shirt is black, and there is no visible, telltale red staining the cloth. But the bullet must have hit her somewhere in her now drooping left arm or shoulder. Eric lifts what was once Adrian's weapon and tries to run toward the others, but his foot is still snared in the rope attached to his chair, and he trips. He falls hard and lands on top of the weapon. The wooden handle snaps near the base of the jury-rigged flower of blades with a weak, imposter gunshot crack. Leonard is almost to Adrian, and he stretches out a hand toward her. Adrian re-raises the knife, but shakily, and her face is cleared of expression and emotion. Rubbed out. Erased. Andrew fires again. Underpinning the mini detonation of the gunshot, there's a soft, wet, sucking sound. Adrian's throat explodes into a geyser of blood. Leonard is close enough that blood sprays onto his face and the front of his shirt. Her arm drops, and so does the knife. Then she falls, too, collapsing to the floor, landing on her back. Blood spurts and pumps from her neck in endless supply. Her gurgles become hisses, fading in volume, until there's no sound at all. Eric flips onto his back and tries to kick the tangle of rope from his leg. Andrew's mouth hangs open, his upper lip quakes, and his eyes are wide O's. The gun lowers, pointed at the floor or at the dying Adrian. Andrew doesn't initially react to Leonard's changing course, charging past Adrian and at him. Andrew raises his gun, but he's too late. Leonard is right on top of him, and with both of his hands grabs Andrew's hand and gun. Andrew's arms go above his head, pulled up by Leonard. The crown of Andrew's head is only at Leonard's chin because of the height difference. Andrew grunts and yells and rams his head into Leonard's neck and chest, and he lifts his knees, bouncing them into Leonard's midsection. Leonard doesn't flinch and doesn't let go. Wen floats out of the doorway and into the common room, gravity sucking her into the orbits of the crashing bodies. She stares down at Adrian. Her eyes are half closed, and the skin of her face is a fancy doll's white, glowing above the gaping red hole of her throat. Her already dark hair is blackened by the expanding pool of blood. To Wen's right, Eric frantically kicks his tied-up leg, and the attached chair skitters around like a dog happy to see its owner finally returned home. Wen dodges the chair and crouches next to Eric. She taps his leg just above the knee. He sees her and stops kicking. She says, "I can help." She tries sliding her fingers under the coils, but because of Eric's flailing about, the rope is wound tight and haphazardly, and she can't find the original knot. Eric sits up, and his hands join Wen's. One of his hands is wet with Adrian's blood, and he smears red onto the rope. He doesn't quite push Wen away, but he takes over tugging hard on the lines and pulling out knots and loops hidden within other loops. The rope begins to melt away, the tangled mass unwinding as though his leg is a spool. Wen leans back and sits perched on top of her feet. She folds her hands in her lap. Her fingers are pink with Adrian's blood. Wen marvels at how much bigger Leonard is than Andrew. Despite the size difference, they continue to wrestle to a stalemate over the gun. Leonard lowers his right shoulder and drives it into Andrew's chest. Andrew twists enough to avoid the brunt of the force, which throws Leonard off balance, and the two of them crash into the wall next to the doorframe with a cabin-shaking thud. Their arms fall from over their heads like a plummeting castle gate. Their hands swallow up the gun, but as they sweep their arms left and then back right, the black eye of the short, stunted barrel is visible, sunken into the entangled tree roots of their fingers. Leonard twists and slams his weight back into Andrew, pinning him against the wall. Leonard yells, "Let go! Just let go!" Wen yells, "You're hurting him! Stop!" Eric is almost free from the rope and chair. Andrew's face is red, and his body shrinks under the assault of Leonard's insistent size and strength. Andrew's breaths are coarse and irregular. His feet slide and stab out from behind Leonard, desperate for purchase and a path to freedom. But he isn't going anywhere. Andrew drops suddenly, perhaps purposefully, to his knees, as though his ankles and shins are made of thin cardboard and crumple under his weight. Leonard stumbles, loses balance, and bashes the side of his head against the wall's wooden panels. He pops back upright and vigorously attempts to shake the gun free, yanking Andrew's arms up and down and side to side. And then Wen doesn't see or hear or feel anything anymore. Bloody like the day you were born. 5. Leonard. Andrew and Eric are with Wen's body. They are huddled on the floor to his left. They hold her. They surround her. They shield her from Leonard. They wail and scream her name. And then they are just screaming. Moments ago, the gun in Andrew's hands were nested dolls inside Leonard's hands. Andrew was fatigued, weakening, and ready to yield. Leonard felt the waning resistance in Andrew's quivering, failing attempts to push him away. Leonard was going to graciously accept surrender without judgment, without threat of reprisal, and gently guide the gun out of Andrew's hands and salvage salvation from ruin. But then Andrew wrecking balled himself to the floor and pulled Leonard off balance, bouncing his head painfully off the wall. Anger flashed like a bright and hissing road flare. He was not cold, blank, removed. Leonard was not him, as when Redmond was killed. Leonard was as angry as he's ever been, and he wrenched and torqued Andrew's arms like he wanted to rip them off, discard them, and tear the rest of the cabin and then the world into irretrievable pieces. Andrew's hands were a fistful of hornets inside Leonard's hands, and he squeezed, trying to crush them all. And when Leonard squeezed, he felt the subtle vibration and click of the trigger under his palms. Leonard's hands are currently pressed flat against the floor, yet he is still feeling that trigger click, which is now a physical timestamp delineating his brief history into before and after. There was the gunshot, and the jolt that reverberated up his arms. It was only after Wen fell that he noticed the heat of the passing bullet glowing on his fingers still wrapped around the gun. Leonard wasn't looking directly at Wen, but in the instant after the gunshot, there was a blooming flower of red, a sunspot in the blur of her face. He wasn't looking directly at Wen, but he saw her fold backward. He is on all fours and he is crying. His head is down. He will not look at Wen now. He cannot look at what happened to her. He won't. He is a coward and a failure, and he doesn't deserve to see her ever again. Leonard whispers, "I'm sorry," over and over. He says it out loud and he says it in his head, hoping someone will believe him. He is still going to do what must be done, what he was asked and then commanded to do. He crawls and Adrian's legs pass below his carriage, like the yellow lines of a lonely mountain road. He makes sure to witness and remember every detail of this small journey over the length of her body. This is the first penance of many to come, for breaking a promise to a child, for the hubris of issuing the promise in the first place. Adrian's death, he knew, was a possibility, a probability, even. Leonard says, "Sorry," again, and this one, the quietest one, is for Adrian. He is sorry because when she was shot, he felt relief and a spark of joy that the burden of her death was taken away from him. He wouldn't have to kill her like he killed Redmond. That Redmond might have had another name and assaulted Andrew, right now he believes Andrew, shakes his faith in what he is doing here more than he has let on. But what choice does he really have at this point other than to continue? Continuing is neither brave nor cowardly. And it is both. Having seen what he has seen and felt what he has felt, Leonard puts his faith in the soothing power of having no choice. He reminds himself that he is only a vessel and an imperfect one. But he fears all that has gone wrong, so terribly, horribly wrong, is his fault and his alone. Leonard continues to crawl over Adrian's body, and his hands sluice through her still warm blood. His hands have always been bloody, and are finally being honest about it. He was born in blood, like we all were. He slides his right hand under Adrian's waist and backside. He retrieves her mesh mask from a back pocket. It is soft and as fragile as a baby bird. He tries to not get blood on the mask, to keep it white for as long as he can. He has the same mask in his pocket, too. He imagines what he will see when it slides over his face. Will he see the world through it, or only outlines and dark shapes? Will he no longer see the blood? He wonders if he'll be afforded the opportunity to put the mask on himself, or if there will be anyone left alive to fit it over his face after he is dead. Mask in hand, and knees wading deeper into her blood, Leonard crawls until his face is directly above Adrian's. Her throat is a mess of ruined anatomy, still leaking blood and fizzing air bubbles and a coppery odor tinged with the acidity of bile. He does not want to linger on the ragged skin and exposed tissue of the wound, but seeing her turned to stone face is worse. Her lips are parted, a door thoughtlessly left open. Her squinty brown eyes are obscured by sagging upper eyelids, one hanging lower than the other. This malfunction of her smallest muscles and the resulting asymmetry is a final indignity, and he already has difficulty recalling what she looked like when she was alive. Leonard does not want to disturb her head or body. He fears the mask erases who you were, but he must put it on her. The mask is part of the mysterious, seemingly random ritual he doesn't understand, that was never fully explained beyond vague, dire consequences of incompletion. The ritual must be followed bureaucratically. Otherwise, Wen's and Adrian's deaths would be wasted. If they die for naught, what would be the point? At this thought, he remembers the cabin's TV hanging on the back wall, that eerie portal to the wider world, and he feels its black screen, that single unwavering eye, leering at him. He is afraid to turn on the TV and witness its judgment, but he will have to soon. He stretches the mask open and slides it over the crown of Adrian's head. There is no maybe about it. He is erasing her with this mask, and it is a blessing, one he hopes he is worthy to receive. Leonard only wants this to be done, and then to be taken away from this cabin and never be made to remember the promise he broke. He is careful to not jostle or displace Adrian's head, but his hands were not made for this task, and he is rough and clumsy. It takes two attempts to get the mesh over the back of her skull and all that blood-soaked hair. When he finally coaxes it onto her, the mask hugs her face and features, a new simplified skin. Given how much blood is on his hands, the mesh is remarkably white. He has the defiant urge to protest what has happened and all the shitty things he's been made to do, and smear a red slash over her mouth and dots over her eyes. Andrew is now standing next to Leonard and pointing the gun. He shouts, "Fucking get up!" His eyes are glowing coals. His teeth are bared and his cheeks are blotchy red. The blood underneath is eager to come out and be free. Leonard does not fear the gun. He does not fear for his own safety. That will never again be his concern. Whatever happens to him, he deserves. He says, "I promised Wen she would be okay, and I wouldn't let anything happen to her. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry." This is not the right thing to say, and he knows this confession will only torment both Andrew and Eric. But he has to say it. He selfishly has to have it on record. For all the blood already spilled and for all the blood to come, he still meant to keep that promise to Wen for as long as he was standing, until the end of everything. Andrew pistol whips the side of Leonard's face just below the temple. A bright light goes supernova, washing out his view of the room. A stabbing pain quickly morphs into the simmering sting of an open cut and the dull ache of swollen tissue. Leonard falls off his knees and returns to all fours, a reversal of the evolutionary ascent of human's pictograph. His hands are again baptized in Adrian's blood. There's a high-pitched tuning fork ring in one ear, and he is gazing into Adrian's masked face when Andrew kicks him in the ribs. Leonard remains prostrate, penitent, and ready to accept more. He deserves this. Andrew shouts at Leonard to stand up. His shouts degrade into incoherent, larynx shredding growls. He presses the gun's barrel against Leonard's face in the same spot where he hit him. Leonard stands up slowly, an electric current of agony splintering through his head. Over Andrew's shoulder, he sees Wen's body on the floor and the red on her face, and he looks away. He says, "I'm sorry. I'm so sorry." Tears, spit, and snot stream from Andrew's face. His arm shakes. His whole body is shaking. He hits Leonard with the gun again, smashing his jaw, spinning his head, and redlining the volume of the wine in his ear. Leonard looks at Wen's body again because he can't help it. He prays for her to get up. Yet another prayer of his that won't be answered. Eric lumbers up from his crouched position by his daughter's side. After two foe-like steps, he stumbles and falls to the floor, blocking Leonard's view of Wen. Eric throws up, and he sways and swoons into a sitting position, a line of vomit hanging from his open mouth. Leonard says, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." Andrew limps backward, never taking the gun off Leonard, and grabs the chair Eric was tied to. He drags it across the short distance, and it tumbles into Adrian's legs. "Sit in that chair, and don't fucking move," he asks Eric. "Are you all right?" Eric rocks back and forth. His eyes are closed, and his head is lost in his hands. He says, "No." His voice is a sigh, as heavy and lonely as a name whispered into an empty room. Leonard says sorry again and again. He'll be doomed to say sorry for eternity, and no one will listen, and no one will believe him. He picks up the chair and takes two small steps toward the kitchen, so he is not sitting in Adrian's blood. Before placing the chair upright on the floor, he kicks aside a coil of rope with which he tied up Andrew. The rope careens into the end table and wobbles its little yellow-shaded lamp, which spins in two slow, drunken circles, waiting until he places the chair on the floor before going still. He sits, ending the concatenation. He will follow Andrew's instructions. He will not move. He will sit there and he will wait for Andrew to do whatever it is he's going to do. Andrew goes to Eric and coaxes him onto his feet. Eric says, "We have to leave. We have to take her with us." And they both look behind them at Wen, and they rest their foreheads together, and they break down into more tears, the kind that bow, bend, and mesh the men's bodies into the shapes and symbols of grief. Andrew breaks from their embrace, is the first to stand upright, and he props up Eric. He whispers in a flash flood of words, "I need your help. We need to tie him down. We'll tie him down so he can't follow us, and then we can go. The three of us will go away." Eric says, "Okay. Okay." But he doesn't appear able to focus, and he sinks to his knees. Eric is not well. Because of the physical strain and exertion of the fight, he must be experiencing renewed symptoms of his concussion. Andrew speaks in a conspiratorial lower register. "You hold the gun and hold it on him. I'll tie him to the chair, all right? I'll tie him, you watch him, make sure he doesn't get up. You can do that, right? I know you can do it." Eric says, "No." He shakes his head as deliberately as a shadow creeping across a sundial. "I can't do that." "You have to. Please. I'll tie him down and you hold this." Andrew looks at the gun in his hand, and his eyes widen as though utterly horrified by what he sees or horrified by what he saw. "I'll tie him. I can do that." Eric staggers and careens away. Andrew continues talking as though Eric is still next to him, leaning on him, listening to him. "Then you shoot him if he..." He can't get it all out, and he breaks down and the gun rattles in his hand. Eric wobbles like he's navigating a high wire. He veers around Adrian's legs instead of passing over her and plops himself onto his butt in front of Leonard. Eric's eyes are all whites and pupils. He looks at Leonard once, or through him. He reels in coils of rope. One end is still tied to the leg of the chair in which Leonard sits. Eric then winds the nylon around Leonard's legs, making no mind of knots, snares, and tangles. He isn't doing a good job. There's no pattern or reason to the loops, and he isn't pulling tightly on the rope to ensure there's no slack. Leonard initially thinks he will be able to wiggle free if he wants to. But there is a lot of rope, and Eric uses it all on Leonard's now mummified legs. Eric then belly crawls behind the chair and gathers the other rope Leonard kicked away moments ago. Leonard puts his hands behind the chair before Eric asks him to do so. He tells Leonard to do it anyway, and his voice floats up like he's speaking from the bottom of a hole. He winds a couple of lines around Leonard's chest, under his arms, the back of the chair, and then spindles the rest of the rope around his hands and wrists. A blast of wind crashes the open front door into the wall and drags into the cabin its tail of dirt, dried grass, leaves, and pine needles. Eric cries out, startled and terrified, and he collapses to Leonard's left. Eric cries and talks to himself, and he crawls to the front door that indecisively hovers on whorls of air, pushed and pulled by unseen hands. Andrew limps over Adrian's body and stands in front of Leonard, well within arm's reach, if Leonard had a free one. The gun is lowered. He isn't looking at Leonard, and he isn't looking at Eric. He looks at his red, swollen hands and the gun. Leonard knows what he is thinking. How can he not think it? Saying it will not help. But he says it anyway. It's not your fault, Andrew. It was an accident. You can't blame yourself. I know you didn't. We were wrestling, and the gun was in both our hands, and Leonard can't bring himself to say that he squeezed his hands and the gun went off. He is not going to say that. Out loud. He is not going to say that he knows, ultimately, when is dead, because he and the others heedlessly went along with what they were told to do, and he couldn't say no, because it was too hard, maybe even impossible. But he still should have tried to say no anyway. He is not going to say that, despite the horror of what's already taken place, he will still try to save the world, even as he fears it is no longer worth saving. During Leonard's stammering pause, Eric makes it to the door, which winnows in and out of his grasp. Andrew's face is stippled with overnight growth of black beard stubble, and his hair hangs in front of one eye, and the other doesn't blink. He presses the end of the gun barrel, that black dot rimmed in steel, against Leonard's forehead. Leonard hopes he shoots. He wants this to be over. He is sorry he couldn't save everyone. He couldn't even save one child. The front door slams shut, and Leonard jumps in his chair and exhales the breath he didn't know he was holding. He grieves that the slamming door was not a gunshot. He wants to cry, that he is still here with Andrew looking at him the way he's looking at him. Leonard finishes off his long pause, because he's selfish. The gun just went off, Andrew. It's no one's. It just went off, and I'm... Andrew pulls the trigger. Leonard hears the empty click. He hears it, even though Andrew is screaming in his face. Andrew pulls the trigger again and again and again. He presses the gun harder into Leonard's forehead, forcing his head back until Leonard is looking up at the ceiling. The dusty old wagon wheel hangs above. Leonard's eyes water, and the wheel is blurry and it sways slightly, acknowledging the struggle below it. But the wheel is not turning, and it will never turn again. 6. Eric. You don't have to worry about me doing anything. I'm not leaving this chair until it's all over. Andrew. Hey, you should check on Eric. Eric, are you okay? Listen, Andrew, we need to talk. I don't know if this is over yet. We have to check. Andrew. Andrew. Leonard prattles on. His voice is a burring rumble, looping inside Eric's skull. Well, there's certainly no room for Leonard in there at all. Eric feels worse than he did yesterday in the initial agonizing hours after he bounced his head off the floor. This second round of concussion symptoms is more intense. While breathing and seeing are bearable acts now, the pressure and pain before this most recent blackout was near blinding. His throat stings and his mouth tastes like puke. He doesn't remember vomiting. He doesn't remember sitting against the front door. He remembers his hands holding and manipulating rope, but not feeling it. He remembers walking and then crawling through a miasmic haze. He remembers the open doorway and the light as an amorphous, malicious entity, so bright it was impossible they all weren't burned to cinders. He remembers being afraid it was coming to take Wen away if he didn't shut the door. He remembers Wen, sitting on her knees next to him as he untied his legs. He remembers a bang, and Wen falling away from him. He remembers seeing her face and knowing she was gone. He remembers praying in his head, "Please, God, no," over and over, and maybe he was screaming it too. Leonard is still talking, as fuzzy as an old recording. "Eric? You should take it slow, Eric." Outside, the sky has turned cloudy, overcast, as gray as November rain. Eric sits with his back against the front door, barricading the cabin, preventing the terror of the light from re-entry. A few steps away, Leonard is tied to a chair. A thin trickle of blood leaks down the left side of his face. There is more blood on the cabin floor, dark, swollen pawns of it. One tributary leads away from the middle of the floor to Adrian's body, which lies perpendicular to the screen slider. A gaggle of flies as black as crows flitter on and off her body. Some flies linger on her neck, and others spiral over her white mask and bounce madly off the screen door and kitchen windows. To Eric's left, and on the floor in front of Wen's bedroom, is a spread-out comforter. Thick and puffy, its light green has gone darker in the spots where it absorbs Wen's blood. Andrew is sitting on the couch. His head is down, and his hair hangs in front of his face, like the leaves and branches of a weeping willow. His arms vine underneath Wen's body draped across his lap. She is swathed tightly in their flannel bedsheet. Queen-sized, there is enough material to transform her body into an oblong, formless cocoon, a chrysalis, from which she will not emerge. The sheet is white and decorated with clusters of small blue flowers. They brought the flannel set from home in case it got cold in the cabin. Eric says, "Andrew. Andrew." He flashes to another time, lost but not forgotten, when Andrew was sitting like this and he smiled, held a finger to his lips and mouthed, "Shh, she's asleep." Eric says, "Let's get in the SUV and go." They slash the tires. "Drive on the flat tires then. It doesn't matter. It's not going to make it. We can try." Andrew speaks in sentences made of broken glass. "The SUV won't get far. We can try, but it won't make it all the way out to the main road. Might not even make it out of the driveway. Maybe we can find their car, which has to be parked somewhere on the road, right? Leonard doesn't have keys on him, neither does Adrian. I checked. Even if we find keys, we're still going to have to walk the dirt road, some, all of it. Then we'll walk." When Eric talks, the volume of the flies buzzing increases, a dangerous collective thrumming, a warning so loud he wonders if a bee's nest isn't stirred up somewhere. Two flies, as plump as thumb heads, land on Leonard's face. Leonard doesn't so much as twitch as the flies explore his skin.
Eric. Huh? Okay, yeah, I'm here.
Eric sits up straighter, catching himself from slouching and sliding away into the black hole center of the cabin. Andrew says,
"We'll go when you are ready." "I'm ready now."
"Sabrina is still out there somewhere, and she has her weapon. I'm out of bullets. There are more in the trunk. One of us has to carry Wen."
"We're not leaving her here. Never. She's coming with us, wherever we go."
Eric says,
"Okay, come on, I'm ready."
Eric presses his body against the door and grinds himself into an upright position. Leonard says,
"Wait, please wait.
Before you go, you have to turn on the TV.
Listen, Adrian's dead, so we have to turn on the TV and see what's happening. See if there's anything happening, like we did yesterday after Redmond.
He died, and we turned on the TV and we saw the cities drowning, like I said we would. So we have to turn on the TV now. We have to see if..."
Leonard pauses with his mouth open, like he cannot believe what came out of his mouth. Then repeats,
"We have to see if..."
and stops again. Neither Andrew nor Eric asks for further explanation. Andrew's head is down again, making a hermit's cave out of himself. Leonard continues,
"We have to see if what happened here in the cabin stopped what is supposed to happen out there next. We have to see if Wen's death is enough to stop the end of the world."
Andrew rocks back and forth on the couch. He says, "I'm going to kill you if you say one more goddamn word."
Leonard says,
"If you do, you'll still need to watch and find out if her death is accepted as the required sacrifice, a willing sacrifice. It has to be a willing sacrifice. That's why we kept asking and begging you both to choose. We couldn't sacrifice one of you. That wasn't allowed. We told you it was you who had to choose. It had to be a choice. I'm afraid she might not count."
Andrew shouts, "She doesn't count? She doesn't fucking count?
No, that's not what I mean. Of course she counts. She counts more than anything in the world. I'm saying you were supposed to choose. The sacrifice was supposed to be a willing one, and it wasn't. It was an accident, a terrible accident. No one chose this. Maybe it's enough, but I don't know. It doesn't feel like it's over. Turn on the TV and we'll know. Just turn it on."
Leonard rambles on about the television and how sorry he is for everything. Eric closes his eyes and sends out a general,
"Please, God, in the name of your son, Jesus Christ, help us," prayer.
He feels an oddly focused heat radiating through the front door, along with the chainsaw sound of a mass of gathering insects. No, this, whatever this is, doesn't feel like it's over. Andrew stands up, turns around, bends, and gently places Wen's body on the couch. His right hand lingers, resting on her covered head. Eric wanders away from the door and into the cabin. He says,
"I'll take her. You can give her to me. I won't drop her."
And he holds out his arms. He isn't sure Andrew hears him over the flies and Leonard's continued voluminous pleas. Andrew hovers over Wen for a moment, and then he leans sharply to his left and grabs the dual-tipped weapon propped against the far end of the couch and wall. He spins and limps to Leonard, brandishing the sledgehammer end. Leonard says sorry once more and goes quiet. He doesn't beg or plead or ask for mercy. He doesn't flex or strain against the ropes. He doesn't close his eyes. He lifts his chin, neither defiant nor proud. He
He breathes audibly through his nose and his body tremors and quakes. Eric says, "Andrew, what are you doing?" and slides in front of him. His arms are still held out for Andrew to give him Wen's body,